recorder going? Start
Yes, it
him up.
is. It
Good.
is going. We got 108 kilobytes so far.
Ah, create new group. I hate this new interface.
Well, you can't tell by the way I use my walk. I'm a woman's man. No time to talk.
They make it too easy. They put it up front. Not where it used to be, but it's right there. Oops, what am I adding Kyle for? Hold on.
Oh boy. Can't even remember what show you're
I
recording
can't
now.
even remember. Oh shit, I dialed Kyle now. God damn it. Son of a bitch.
I'm trying to kick Rob off the show.
I guess.
And rip.
There we go. Now I think we're okay. Kyle's being called in too. I don't know.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
How is everyone?
Fine.
Good.
Mike's trying to replace you with
Yeah.
Kyle.
How
He
come?
wants. I don't know. You gotta ask him.
I think it's
Mike, I'm
because of
asking.
Jubilee it comes down to. I don't know.
Well, that hurts.
No, I was calling Kyle in instead of you by accident.
Is Kyle available?
No,
No.
that's why you're
Oh,
here.
that's why you're here.
It says Bill Bomer.
Does it really? Did I call Bill in too?
It's 3 of 5 are on the call.
Oh,
But Bill
fuck.
hasn't answered.
I must have dialed everybody.
Mike just wants he wants all of his co-hosts at once.
Yeah.
I just called everybody.
Might as well get it all over with.
Fuck
One
it.
point. Yeah.
I'm going to a convention today.
What?
Yeah. Even though it's all celebrities, I'm going by myself. This is the first con I'm ever going to by myself.
Wow.
What's it called? Where is it?
It's here in the town. It's the Colorado Springs Comic Con. It's like
Ah.
90% celebrities and 10% comic people.
But
Yeah,
you've never gone to a con by yourself?
Yeah, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go look to buy some old Batman and
Good.
maybe some Punisher. I don't know. Maybe something else will strike me.
That's
If
cool.
there's anything on sale, I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I've never been to this con. There might not be nothing.
Well, when you go, get an autograph of that woman from Harry Potter. I can't remember her name, but I know that Stacy likes her. She's got pink hair in the movie.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. I'm going to see
What's her?
I'm going to be sitting with Shannon Elizabeth from American Pie. That's where I'll be sitting.
Oh, okay. Hey, Bob Layton's there.
Yeah, Bob Layton and Ron Mars and there's a few there.
Get a nice little sketch from Bob Layton.
Banks is there from the he did the Green Lantern back in the day. The Kyle series.
Oh, okay. Yep. Oh, Derek Riggs is there. Oh my God, I wish I was going.
Well, come on, come down. Don't
I'm
make me
never going
go
to
by
make it
my
in time.
don't make me go by myself. Come
Derek
with
Riggs
me.
was the original artist of all of Iron Maiden's covers and singles for
Oh yeah, I saw
like
that.
15 years or something like
I
that.
saw that.
Oh my God, what an artist.
I saw that. I'm not a big Iron Maiden fan, though. I like Number of the
I know.
Beast and Run to the Hills. They're Iron Maiden, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
You
Always been
like
a big fan.
that opening, The Number of the Beast,
Yeah.
666. And your parents
Curtis
were looking
Armstrong will
at
be
you
there,
like,
booger.
hey, your parents
Oh
were
my
looking, what are
God.
you listening to, son?
Well, did I tell? I think I remember telling you this might have been years ago. When I just when you guys had me guess that one day, that my when I bought their first album, my mom took out. I bought it on record because again, I loved the art, so I actually wanted the biggest representation of art. So I got the record. She pulls out the sleeve. It has all the lyrics on there. She reviewed all the lyrics.
Yeah, and then what happened?
Uh-huh. She said it wasn't as bad as she expected.
So
I mean, they never swear. They never swear. And honestly, you know, I mean, I try to pose it as, you know, they're telling stories through song. What's the difference between that and reading a book about, like, a subject matter or whatever?
Run to the Hills, really, if you listen to the lyrics, is a pretty powerful song.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I mean, exactly. It's about losing your land and being Native American and losing
Later album, that the one that I got, had Rime of the Ancient Mariner, which is basically like the song version of that huge poem by whoever that was, Samuel Taylor Coleridge or whatever. So it's like, you know, they were just telling stories. So
I've never owned an Iron Maiden. I've bought some singles later in life, like I bought a couple of, like, their popular stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because we made music videos of them in high school, so. I almost burned my friend's house down, but I've never owned any of their CDs or tapes or anything, with the exception of the singles I bought on iTunes many, many years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was a.
Did they have a lot of stuff that's like demonic or not really?
It was the name of the album and name of the. Of the song. So that was during the whole satanic cult scare of the 80s. So
yeah,
that was an American thing.
So did your mom see that?
They were from
that?
England. They didn't really get it. They didn't know what the big deal was.
Did your mom see that?
No, I'm not sure that she did. Cause that was before I started following them.
Oh.
I went back and got it after the fact, but, but at that point, you know, they were pretty much okay with it at that point.
You're kind of a grown ass man. You can make your own decisions. I'll guide you to this point, and then if you want to listen to this devil music and worship the devil, that you're on your own. I still love you, son.
Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah, they were pretty okay with it, and it was fine. It was just music.
My parents had no problem with it. Like, I had AC/DC on 8-track, and then, you know, they had Highway to Hell and Hell's Bells, and I had several songs with hell in it, or the devil. I mean, that was the thing of rock and roll back then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Motley Crue.
I never bought Motley Crue, and I don't know why I went on this Barb listened to Motley Crue back in the day, but... I went on this, like, pedestal because of his drunk driving thing, and I didn't want to do anything with them. Because Vince Neil got DWI and did something. I don't remember.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I remember roller skating and being pissed off. Like, I don't want to listen to his music.
They like to shout at the devil.
Yeah.
Mike Grell's going to be there.
Yeah, that's the one that would have driven me to go yesterday, because I'm not going to try to do a commission like in an hour. No way. Like, I'm going to go I'm going to be there for 2 hours, but I would have went because I have like 4 Mike Grell commissions, and I did not know that one slid past me. Like, Pat Broderick's going to be there.
I was just looking at that too. Yeah.
He's known for like Captain Atom. Like, that's what I know him from. Like, he did a lot of stuff, but the Captain Atom run was pretty prominent with Kerry Bates.
Yeah, that's cool.
They had a cool panel yesterday. Like, they had a Green Lantern panel with like Ron Mars and several of the artists. Mike Grell did some. He was there because he did some Green Lantern, and because there is nothing more awesome than Mike Grell panel. Like, the stories that guy tells is just like worth the price of admission right there.
Really?
Cool. If they have a Mike Grell panel,
yeah,
it's just awesome. He can talk, and he's very interesting.
How big of an area are you in? Like, is Colorado Springs?
I don't know. It's probably as big as where you're at. I don't know. No, you have a football team. Never mind.
Well, that doesn't really
We're almost like an extension of Denver. I mean, we're really close, but I don't know.
I mean, you got some
The population is pretty big because there's 3 Air Force installations, 1 Army base, and there's 3 Air Force installations, 1 Army base in Cheyenne Mountain.
Which so where you are, if they're having a Comic-Con, and I know that Denver has their own Comic-Con, but and so I don't know how far away you are, but like, will people from Denver, from do you have like a larger area of people that are going to come to this con, or is it pretty
I have no idea. I have always skipped for the reason that I just told you. It's all celebrities.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And celebrity stuff makes me feel awkward for some reason because... Yeah, I like to meet these people, but like you pay like $30 to get in, and then you have to like pay them to take a picture with you. Like,
yeah, it's weird.
And that's really what you want to do. You don't want like just a signature because you could buy a signature and a photo off of eBay.
Yeah.
But like if you want something personalized, you want a picture of you with them, and it's just like a weird. I don't know. It's like. It's weird, very bizarre. I mean, the ones that I've enjoyed is when I took them with Erin Gray because I got to talk to her for a while because there was, like, nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen her twice. And then the other one that was so much fun was Michael Anthony Hall because girls were taking off their panties in front of the...
Oh. Okay,
yeah, then. And I was like, this is interesting. You know, from 16 Candles, how he had the panties, like he came out of the boys' bathroom and had the panties over because she Molly Ringwald gave him the panties.
Well, I just looked it up, and believe it or not, Colorado Springs is showing 465,000 people.
Yeah.
Buffalo, 256,000.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But if there's a Buffalo Comic-Con, and Chris, you'd back me up on this, it's not that's the city of Buffalo's population. The entire area of like the entire county, like the Western New York area, if they're interested in the Comic-Cons, that's the draw for the Comic-Con in Buffalo. Like it won't be just like I don't live in the city of Buffalo. Chris doesn't live in the city of Buffalo. You know what I mean? But so it's more like the county. And that obviously probably would be bigger than your city.
Hmm. Yeah, you would if you include the whole metropolitan area of Buffalo and Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
You're looking at over 1 million people.
Right. Yeah. Erie County it shows 922,000 and then that doesn't include Niagara Falls.
How close are you to Niagara Falls? You guys,
I'm 20 minutes away.
Yeah, I'm probably 45 minutes or so. But I grew up about 5 minutes from there.
Well, when is a good time to go to Niagara Falls, where it's not too crowded but it's not freezing?
Maybe the fall,
like September.
Mm-hmm. I mean, September is beautiful weather.
It's still nice here in September.
Yeah, it's only gotten nicer, you know, in the past 5-10 years. It's September can be just as nice as August lately. Wow. But yeah, I mean, kids are going back to school and stuff, so there's not so many of the tourists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I would recommend September, even early October, before it starts getting cold. You get the nice... you know, change in the leaves and you know, the actual, because they have, you know, parks and stuff over in that area as well, as well as the falls and all the touristy stuff.
Can you, like, see a little boy pointing at Niagara Falls and playing on the rails and falling over and then Superman comes and saves him? That's what I want to see.
Well, I guess you'd have
and
to...
And then Lois looks around like, Clark! Where are you?
You can arrange for the first part of that to happen, probably.
Yeah,
the kid falling off.
Yeah. I don't know.
Unfortunately, Superman won't swoop in and save the day.
Probably not.
Probably not. So you're going to your Comic-Con today. We have the Buffalo Comic-Con is on September 15th and 16th. And I just want to quickly read you the illuminaries that are coming so far. Chris, I don't know if you've been keeping track of this.
What day is this?
The 15th
and 16th of September. So in about 3 weeks. We're going to be hosting the famous R.B. White. Bill Anderson, who I actually know from Elementals and stuff. Jerry Lang. Kevin Delgado. John Warren. Casey Bowker. Jason Youngbloth. Darius Johnson. And Nigel Carrington.
I don't know a lot of those names.
I don't know any of them.
I've never heard of
them. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I do know them because they come to every single Buffalo Comic-Con.
Heard of Elementals.
Yeah, there's no one that has done any type of national work, you know, like big name work, except for Bill Anderson.
I actually felt weird. I thought you were reading off these names like they were superstars, and I was like, man, I feel bad. I don't...
And then for the special guests that aren't comic book guests, we have Jeremy Palko from The Walking Dead. I see he's coming to yours as well.
There's a lot of Walking Dead, and the one thing that I was interested in is they had like a dinner party with the nerds, and Revenge of the Nerds was like a big deal for me. Like, I love that movie, and like everybody's there except for Anthony Edwards. It's got Booger, it's got Ogre, it's got the main guy, it's got the girl that he fell, the blonde girl that he fell in love with. I mean, Lamar is there. I mean,
you're having quite a reunion there.
Having quite a reunion, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. And so besides that Walking Dead guy, there's Catherine Sutherland, who was a Pink Ranger, and Nakia Burris, who was a Yellow Ranger. That's literally it 3 weeks beforehand.
Wow.
Chris, I don't know if I'm going.
Yeah, it's not really much.
You know what the thing is?
Wait. I'm looking here too, and I'm calling out your bluff there because I can see that Paul's Donuts is going to be there.
Yes, well.
I wish you guys could come with me, man. I'd have so much fun.
I wish we could.
Because part of the con is just hanging out with friends. I mean, that's the part I like.
Yeah.
So
I mean, if I go, I might to this one. I might go for that Saturday, but it's gonna depend on what I feel like doing because I don't mind walking around looking for comics, but I'm not even sure what the ticket price is, and if it's a little bit more than I'd like to pay, then I'll probably just skip it. Because there's not anything going on here.
I should have done is gone Friday, but I had a package from mycomicshop.com coming that I need to sign for.
God. You got a major package.
Well, I don't know what it's not more than usual. The weird thing is I paid for the standard shipping, like the $4.90 whatever it is.
Yeah.
I paid for the bare bones. That's what I pay for because I don't care if it takes 10 days to get here or whatever.
I'm always the same
way, just
too.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not in a hurry. I know what I'm going to miss, like, if they couldn't fulfill stuff, like, before because you get the email, right? But So I was like, you know, I don't care. I've been ordering so much from them that I think they sent me priority mail.
Like, we're going to treat this guy right. Why not?
Yeah. Well, we have our comic book of the month returning.
I know. I'm happy.
And I picked something that I was interested in because, you know, she's going to have her own movie. And I have read her in almost every incarnation except for this one, even though I had the collection because I thought her costume was cool. I bought Miss Marvel's full collection somewhere in college and then never read it. But I did read her appearances in early Captain Marvel, so like I know when she was at Cape Canaveral as a security officer. because I've read the first few of that, and that was way, way better than I thought. I liked Captain Marvel way more than I thought I would. So, and the other thing I wanted to pick is because of the writer, because I'm a big Jerry Conway fan. I was kind of disappointed to see he left, but he was replaced by Chris Claremont, so I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, that makes me interested to read the whole run.
Yeah, I've actually, the transition was pretty smooth, because I read through three, but the art was freaking amazing. It's John Buscema art, and like this is like phenomenal art to me. Like I dig this a lot. I dig this art because it's got like a Kirby-esque vibe. At the same time as having his own distinctive pencil, and I loved it. And I've always liked the Captain Marvel costume, like not the original one. The Kree one was kind of the early green and white one was kind of lame. But when he got the red with the yellow star in the center and the blue, I was like, this is an awesome costume. But like when I was getting comics, I think Captain Marvel was almost to be dead. Like he was going to die of... Like when I started going to Don's paperback bookstore is like almost like when the Marvel graphic novels started coming out. Because I remember the New Mutants one coming out. So that's like... That's like when I started going to a comic shop versus when they had things on the spinner rack. And the other reason I picked it is because a good portion of this series is on Marvel Unlimited.
It looks like just about all of it.
Almost all of it. I don't think it has the last few, but I may be wrong.
I have to take a look. That makes a difference to me too. If I want to be able to read the whole thing.
It seems like her power base is a little different. At least if you read issue one, she appears to be more like Supergirl, except she's got a seventh sense. I don't know why they call it the seventh sense, because it's almost like a sixth sense.
Yeah.
It's like I know something's gonna happen, so I gotta be there.
I get a
migraine in order for it to occur. I thought a sixth sense was the same as the way they're showing the seventh sense here. Because like a sixth sense, I did too,
because it's like an ESP thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I was going to say is it's the, it must be like the Spinal Tap effect.
Like, I like that.
They go up to 11, you know.
Well, isn't that the sixth sense? Yeah, isn't that the sixth sense?
No, it's one more than that. Yeah. No, it's not the like sixth sense because it's the seventh sense.
I like it. I like that idea.
Well, they do a good job of pacing because it opens up with the scene where she's stopping a bunch of bank robbers, and it's like the Scorpion is really doing the work behind the scenes, and he's framing these guys. He's setting these guys up so he can rob the bank while they're up front and getting stopped by Miss Marvel. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
It's kind of smart on his part. And the other thing that I had no idea she was having like these migraines, and she didn't know who she was. Like
me neither.
She'd get these like piercing headaches and then not know who she was, and then she'd switch. Like, she'd actually switch to Miss Marvel, and I was like, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and that's what I was confused about, because at the very beginning, when she's knocking out the bank robbers, it seemed like she was more with it than when she came back as Miss Marvel later in the story. She seemed more confused the second time than the first time, so
yeah,
it seemed a
little
weird to me.
The other thing that I thought was amazing that I had no idea of is I had no idea J. Jonah Jameson was publishing a woman's magazine. I just had no idea. That never occurred to me, and that's why he hired her to go work there. She was going to be like the publisher of this new woman's magazine, and she sort of becomes friends with Mary Jane, which is sort of interesting, especially if you read on a little further, because she does some weird things because of her headaches. Like, she doesn't treat Mary Jane all that well. But I really dug that plot line. And what they end up doing is they end up fleshing, like, the links between her and Captain Marvel in the original series. And I read a lot of the early stuff, so I didn't read up to the point where this scene may have occurred, but mm-hmm. I've read before that, so I'm aware of some of the situations. But overall, like, it was sort of a simple plot. She's coming to New York, she gets a new job, and they're setting up her new character, and they also have the Scorpion, which is like her villain in the first two issues. Circumstantially, because she's working for J. Jonah Jameson, and if you know the history of the Scorpion, you know that the Scorpion hates J. Jonah Jameson because he can't get out of his costume. And he basically hired him to go after Spider-Man, and then he...
Mike, just real quick. I mean, you can see his face, the Scorpion's face and stuff, but how does he poop?
I know. I actually was thinking, I kid you not, I thought about that when I knew he was stuck in the costume.
So you see his face, how his mouth is wrapped around it, but he can open and close his mouth. Do you think his butt's the same way?
Well, he's like the only other character besides the Creeper that I know that the costume consumes them, which means mm-hmm. like the Creeper is in the costume, so how does he poop? Well, I assume
Blue Devil was the same way.
Yeah. Well, Blue
it was
Devil
used to.
You're right. Blue Devil's the same way. Those Darren Wersch, well, yeah, Blue Devil is more like Scorpion because at least he could switch back to Jack Ryder, the Creeper,
right.
And he could poop. I have no idea how the Scorpion poops. I assume he poops in his costume, and I guess it just absorbs it.
Maybe you can tell, like, he's got green underwear in that part of his costume. It's not the same scaly kind of stuff as the rest of it. So maybe just that part can come off, so he can drop his drawers, and maybe he can still go to the bathroom and do other things.
You mean they engineered it right, so he can just remove that piece and go poop?
That would be fantastic if that was the case.
Maybe that part's not.
But it seems like if you could crack it, like if you could open it at that level, you could sort of peel it off. I don't know. I guess the mouth is an orifice, so you could peel around that area too.
Yeah, I mean, my only point really is that I don't blame him for being cranky, because if I couldn't poop, I'd be mad at whoever put me in the costume too.
And the Scorpion play. Wow, this comic's worth $230.
Yeah, wow. I was just looking at that.
Glad I bought it in the 80s. I bet you it just went up because of the damn movie.
Yeah, her first appearance is only $155.
Yeah, I don't own that one. That one's in Are they considering her first appearance in Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel Superheroes number 13.
Oh,
I was looking because I wanted to see. That's the second appearance of Captain Marvel.
Does she appear as Carol Danvers, or does she appear as Miss Marvel?
Just Carol Danvers.
Man, I might look for that at the Comic-Con. What the hell?
Yeah.
I have no idea. When I've gone over here, there's only like one guy that has anything that's like pre-80s or 80s or lower. Everybody seems to just have like what's hot now. And I already own that shit, so I don't care. But
yeah, it's not very exciting.
The only one that I still need that would be fairly current is, for some reason, when I was collecting Liefeld, I didn't ever get the Deadpool. The first appearance of Deadpool.
I heard you say that on a thing from like a week ago. I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, how did he not get that one?
Uh-huh. I imagine you have that one, right?
I do, yeah. Yeah. I was collecting New Mutants the whole way, went through all the way up.
And that one's sitting at $300 right now. So it's quite the cost.
See, I don't think that one's going to go down much.
I don't think it will either. I just bought Deadpool 2, the movie, so I liked it a lot.
So did I. Yeah, I liked it better than the first one, and I liked the first one a lot.
I agree with you. There was something just about the timing or something about like the comedic timing of Deadpool 2 that just worked better for me than Deadpool 1. Like it just was funny. I mean, it was really funny.
I mean, I liked the extra characters in it. You know, I thought that Domino was fantastic. I liked seeing Colossus and Teenage Negasonic Warhead again. And it was cool. It was just fun. I mean, it was such a fun movie.
Yeah. But what did you guys think of Ms. Marvel? Because I kind of summarized it really, really quick. Is there anything else that stood out?
Chris, you want to go first?
I thought it was pretty good. It was kind of weird that Ms. Marvel was, I think maybe it's an effect of how her powers and profile has changed over the years, the current day that she was dealing with bank robbers and Scorpion of all people as a villain, you know, was kind of weird because you kind of think of her as on a different level, you know.
Cosmic.
Yeah.
Yeah. She has blast and stuff, and here she doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, just super strong, it said. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're kind of tying her into the Spider-Man world. I think maybe just because of the popularity of Spider-Man. So that was kind of weird, but the stuff with her blackouts and the alter ego kind of not really being aware of what the other half, as if you will, is doing was that aspect of it was interesting. So I do agree about the art though. The art was good.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. It really, this is some of this. Actually the third issue is John Buscema's last. It seemed like it's odd that Jerry Conway started this and left so early, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think he doing Spider-Man at the time of this as well?
He may have. I don't
might
know.
Might have been.
And maybe that's why he kind of threw in some of those. And I don't know. Maybe he was just tasked to get it started.
Wasn't this still kind of a chaotic time period for Marvel as far as the bolting goes? You know, like with all the different editors and chiefs and kind of like until what's his face came along and sort of until Shooter came along and sort of tightened up tightened down the ship kind of thing. Some of it might be attributable to that, just a lot of changing, a lot of disorganization.
This one does have a John Romita cover too and cover inks, so
wow. I liked it. I liked the start of this. She's kind of been a character that I've been interested in. I like the fact that she has like a long history of first not even being a costume superhero for a while, and then getting this, and then it was obviously taken away by Rogue, and then she becomes binary, and then later on something else happened, and she's just got this whole like long history, and I've never read any of these, which now that I'm seeing so many of them are on Unlimited, now you're gonna send me down another another hole of, like, I think one other time you covered a Spider Woman, and I had to grab all the essentials for the 2-volume of the essentials for Spider Woman, which I haven't read yet, but I have them sitting in my room. I think that Ms. Marvel will be similar. I won't necessarily be, you know, need to get these, but I'm definitely going to read them on Unlimited. I'll read the whole run.
Well, there was a lot of fun. There was another reason I wanted to read it, and that was because they solicited her omnibus this previews, and it has this stuff. So
that's cool.
Yeah, there was another motivation for me picking this.
Yeah, but for me,
I was really happy because I know some of the backstory. Because I was reading the old Captain Marvel, and this sort of flowed, and it actually makes me want to read why she had to leave Cape Canaveral. Like, you know, she was supposed to capture Captain Marvel, but I guess failed and was blacklisted for it. But I want to read more, like, how that all happened. Because
did you realize
Captain Marvel was put? Captain Marvel was put on Earth to sort of watch Earth so they could attack. I mean, he had bad motivations. He turned into a hero because his co-conspirator that was monitoring from space turned out to be the bad guy. And Captain Marvel realized when he was working at the base that he wanted to do what was right. And that's what kind of like switched him around.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting story. I'll definitely be interested.
Well, go ahead.
I'll be interested to see what they do in the movie.
Yeah, with the fact that obviously I'm a big Chris Claremont fan, and this was during the time that he was writing X-Men. I want to pick it up, but I'm looking at this and I'm seeing it has later on. It has the first appearance of Deathbird. A little after that, it has the first appearance of Mystique.
Yeah,
this is really fascinating to me because I mean, if you would have asked me, I would have, without thinking about it, and even having read all those X-Men titles, I would have just said, "Oh yeah, Mystique appeared sometime first in one of the X-Men, but I don't remember which one." But nope, it was here, you know, which is cool. So I definitely have to pick these up and read these.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
It's cool that it was. I wanted to pick something that wouldn't cost anybody anything, too. So, Marvel Unlimited has a lot of choices. We'll see what that DC thing has, but I think that's going to be more like a rotating.
That's what it sounds like.
Theme of the month.
Yeah. That I mean, I'll be honest. That disappoints me. I want a set. I want them to go in with a set number of books and keep expanding on it like Unlimited does. And I know that's not going to happen, but now I'm seeing that they're going to have that daily news show and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's starting to get me a little bit more interested and like, well, maybe I should sign up because I haven't signed up for it yet.
Well, they have a lot of things that I didn't get to experience. Like I watched all of the Batman animated series, but I watched recently on Amazon, they had The Batman, and I really liked that. And I've never experienced Batman Beyond, and I think that's what, besides the Titans, that is what I'm going to be drawn towards, is just experiencing the cartoon. Because I enjoy the comics of Batman Beyond. I just never experienced it as the cartoon. So.
Do you guys know if Super Friends is going to be on that or not? I haven't seen anything about that. I actually looked a little yesterday, but couldn't find any information.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. How much of their back catalog is going to be on there?
Because that's something I could obviously get the kids right into. I mean, at 5 years old, they would. You know what I mean? They'd be eating that up.
Do you think they'd like that?
Yeah, I do.
Because it's different though than like animation today. Like it's.
But you know what they love? The Scooby Doo's.
Oh really? The classic.
From the late. Yeah, what we were watching lots of. I got a 2-week trial of Cartoon Network, and we watched a lot of those. The trial expired. I didn't renew it, but I did get on DVD the Scooby-Doo Dynamutt Hour.
Yeah.
And we've been watching. They just sat down. They were just finishing watching the. We watched two back to back. They just finished the second one, so that was like 45 minutes each. They love that stuff.
Yeah, I loved Blue Falcon and Dynamutt.
Me too.
That was like a fantastic cartoon. Chris, you probably missed it. Like, that was probably a little bit before your time.
No, I mean, there was reruns of that stuff on all the time.
USA Network used to rerun that stuff.
I watched a ton of Scooby-Doo when I was a kid.
Yeah, that stuff was on forever in the 80s,
Scooby-Doo
too.
Was on a lot, but it's very hard to find Blue Falcon and Dynamutt.
Yeah, because, I thought they had their own series,
and then
I looked it up. Well, it was part of this hour, and then they kind of, if they did air it, it was just reruns of that same half-hour part of it.
But they used to do that all the time. They used to have the Batman Tarzan Hour, the Plaz, Lone Ranger. You know, they used to do.
Yeah.
They used to combine them, and half hour would be one, and half hour would be the other.
I gotta find some animated Plastic Man too, because the kids love. Plastic Man.
It's yours. All you have to do is say that. It's yours. I'll send it to you. I have two of them.
What are you talking about?
I have two copies of Plastic Man. The animated series on DVD. Do you have a DVD player?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, it's yours.
Oh my God. Well, thank you. He's in like 3 or 4 episodes of that Justice League Action.
Yeah.
Oh my God. They just want to watch those episodes over and over again because of Plastic Man.
That excites me, because that's what Plastic Man should be about. Like, he's just like lighthearted. Like,
oh my God, he cracks them up.
Yeah. Have you been reading the new stuff?
Yeah, it's good.
There's one scene where he's doing, I'm Harlequin. Okay, now. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah.
Chris, he goes, pants.
No pants.
Between the animated version and the Suicide Squad version.
Oh, right.
Isn't that time he makes like an ass out of his face to make the kid smile? He says, Plaz ass.
Yeah, he's awesome. It made me very happy when those two are just cracking up. They're like, we want to watch the one with Plastic Man again.
Well, like, this one they might even dig more, too, because they have a baby Plaz in it.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, yeah, that's thank you so much.
Plaz was, he had an Adventure Hour, too. It was Plastic Man and Fang, or it was like a werewolf, I remember.
Oh, my God, that's right. I can't think of his
name.
But
I can't remember the Fang. He has just one Fang up front. Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, this is bringing some good memories back. I used to watch that stuff religiously. Did you ever see a cartoon called Meatballs and Spaghetti?
No.
Oh my God, it was funny. It only lasted like 1 year, but it was like a sort of like a Cheech and Chong of surfboarding.
Did Daryl make that?
No, Daryl would have enjoyed it, though, because I think in the opening they had a lot of meatballs and spaghetti. Look it up. Meatballs, spaghetti. They had a good theme song, too.
It was a cartoon?
Yeah. The meatballs. They were on around the same time as Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends when he was airing with The Incredible Hulk. Remember, they had that back-to-back hour.
Mm-hmm.
Meatballs and Spaghetti was like either before or after that.
I mean, I'm looking at the Wikipedia on it. It's not familiar to me at all. I don't think I ever watched it.
Well, they're like Cheech and Chong of the beach. They were funny, man.
It only lasted one season.
Yeah, I know it did, but it's so one of those obscure things.
I missed it, that was it. It was done.
I googled meatballs and spaghetti, and I'm just getting recipes.
Well, you have to type Saturday morning cartoon next to it.
The Wikipedia says it's an Italian American dish.
That's what Daryl's. That's his thing.
Yeah.
Well, who wants to go next?
1982.
I'll go with that, Chris.
Yeah, you can go ahead. I'm learning about the real meatball or the cartoon.
Okay.
They toured around in a mobile home.
Yeah.
They were a band.
They were a country band.
They were a band.
Oh, the drummer in the band was a dog.
Hang on, guys. I'll be right back. There's a lot of commotion going on.
Okay. No, that actually.
They're talking about Plaz in the background.
Yeah, they're getting excited. Woofer meets Tweeter. That's one of the episode names. That must have been one of the ones that they taught kids about psychedelics.
What year did that come out in? Just out of curiosity, did it say?
From September of 1982 to September of 1983.
Ah.
I'm back.
Was I barely going to high school at that time? At that time, I would laugh. Like, it made me laugh. So it was, I was pretty young, but not as young. I was a teenager, definitely, so.
Yeah, one of the producers was Marvel Production.
Uh-huh.
So.
That's probably why it came out before Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends or the Hulk. Yeah.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, okay. The
voice of the dog was Frank Welker. The voice
of Scooby-Doo.
Fred. He was Fred in Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm.
And Megatron from Transformers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he still does stuff now.
Oh, yeah, he does. I mean, he's, like, legendary as far as voice actor goes.
Yeah.
Cartoons.
Did you hear, Rob, that this was part of Marvel Comics thing?
That's just when I went back on. I heard that Chris say it was Marvel Productions had something to do with it. That's interesting. All right, so I'm going to – I've been digging into the Batman Arkham Riddler trade. And I have to say, I've been really enjoying this one. It was very surprising to me, and I don't know if you realized this, Mike or Chris, you either, that obviously, you know, the Arkham trade only, you know, it has selections of appearances by the Riddler, but so it had two Golden Age stories, and then it cut to a Silver Age story, which was his first Silver Age appearance. So I looked it up, and sure enough, in the Golden Age, the Riddler only appeared two times. He appeared in Detective Comics 140, and then two issues later in 142. And then that was it. He never appeared again for like 17 years. So I always think of the Riddler as like, you know, obviously probably because of the 60s TV show, as probably, you know, the third/fourth villain that pretty much any non-comics fan maybe would have been able to identify.
Yeah, you'd think Joker, Penguin, Riddler.
Catwoman. Yeah, Catwoman. And Riddler, right? Yeah, those guys for sure, the non-comic fan might know because of the
Two-Face has got to be in the top five too, I think. At least iconic.
Yeah. But it was like
you could kind of tell just from the movies, like what villains
exactly.
Do they focus
that's
on?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Absolutely. The original
Mr. Freeze is an oddball, but if you have you've had Penguin in a movie, mm-hmm. you've had Joker definitely in a couple movies. You've had Riddler. Jim Carrey was the Riddler.
Yep. Catwoman obviously
you definitely had Michelle Pfeiffer, and Catwoman's been several movies, so those are definitely the top 4.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
Mr. Freeze.
It was so surprising.
Mr. Freeze is the anomaly in that, Barb. because he's not. I wouldn't say Mr. Freeze is an A-list Batman villain. I think he's in that second tier.
Yeah.
He's in that second tier with Clayface and some of the others.
Yeah, it was so surprising. It's like, oh my god, so he appeared two times, and then they started to relaunch stuff back in, you know, in the 60s, and this was in the one I'm going to cover is Batman 171 from 1965, The Remarkable Ruse of the Riddler, and that was by Gardner Fox and penciled by Sheldon Moldoff. So that would have been his first appearance since 1948, so a difference of 17 years and only his third appearance overall. So it's kind of cool.
Do you have that one?
No, I do have the next one, 179, I think it is. That's a second Silver Age appearance.
Yeah.
It's in like a very good type condition, but I got it for like 50 cents back at the flea market years and years ago. So I'd love to have this 171 though.
I don't have 179, but I have 171.
Oh, I'd love to get 171. This story was really good too. Oh, did you hear some crying in the background or no?
No.
Yeah.
Chris, you heard it?
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody's upset, even though they're about to go to the playground. I don't know what could be the problem.
Well, now I hear it.
Yeah. So this was a really fun story. It picks up basically like, oh, okay, the Riddler was in jail. He'd been captured back in the previous time he appeared, which was 17 years ago. I mean, they don't talk about the number of years, but it picks right up where the warden is, you know, wishing him luck and that he's served his time. And now it's time for, you know, he needs to leave the prison and try to make a life of himself. And he's saying, okay, you know, I'm going to stay on the straight and narrow. He's telling the warden that he's going to stay on the straight and narrow, but you know that he's like, all right, I'm out. I'm got to get my revenge against Batman and Robin. And he sees that there is a gang called the Molehill Mob that are giving Batman and Robin trouble. And he decides that he can't be that. He wants, when he makes his comeback, all of Batman's attention. He doesn't want to have to share attention with some other gang. So he's like, I'm going to have to do something about this. So he actually meets up with Batman and Robin out of costume and reminds them of who he is. Cause they haven't seen him in so long. And, so they go into his original origin, once again in flashbacks, which is like exactly what I had just previously read in the earlier two issues. And he starts saying, you know what, I've got some information. I can figure stuff out because, you know, I had been a criminal. I can help you catch this Molehill Mob. And so he puts his costume back on. He ends up meeting up with Batman and Robin at night. And just as he promised, he ends up leading them right to their hideout. And actually, he doesn't so much help catch them, but he's there cheering them on. And so this kind of surprises Batman and Robin that the Riddler is working with them. And he's like, I hope that I can convince you that I'm a changed man. And like, well, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. And then he starts sending them riddles. So now they start thinking, okay, now he's back to his old tricks, where they see him running out of a yacht, which was the basis of the clue of a guy that has a famous black pearl of the specific at his yacht. And they see the Riddler running away, and the yacht owner is saying, come back here. You can't do this to me. And so they end up running after him, and they eventually catch him, and they try to take him to jail. And he's like, what are you talking about? I told you I'm reformed. I demand an apology. And they're like, what? And so they take him back to the yacht, and he said, I bought it from the yacht owner. And they're like, I don't think so. And so they even say, well, why were you shouting at him? You know, come back, come back. And he said, oh, because Riddler had told me a riddle. Hang on one second. Bye, honey. You have a good time, okay?
Okay.
And so he's the yacht owner says, well, he told me a really good riddle, and he left without answering it.
So that's what made him run out and tell him, come back, you can't do this to me, because he wanted to know what the answer to the riddle was. And then there's similar things going on where they think that they see him, like, holding up a jewelry store at gunpoint, and it turns out that the jewelry store owner had only asked for a light. He had a cigarette in his mouth, and it was a cigarette. The gun was only a cigarette lighter, and so on and so forth. So finally, it ends up being, you know, basically what Riddler's doing, obviously, is trying to get them lulled into a sense of security that he's not a criminal anymore, but they end up not falling for it, and they solve some more riddles and manage to get to him where he's going to actually steal a bunch of money from a safe from a charity. And they end up solving the riddle. There's like a double meaning to the riddle, and they end up going to the right one, and they end up finally capturing him at the end, and then he's back in jail. And he had told the warden a riddle when he left, and said that if I'm ever back out, that you know, I'll tell what the answer is. And so the riddle was, what do the cons in this prison call it? Why do the cons in this prison call it Fiddler's Hotel? And the answer was, because it's such a vile inn. Yeah. So nice. That wasn't a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But I really liked the story. I thought it was pretty good storytelling from a very, you know, an early issue in his first Silver Age appearance. So, yeah, I'd love to get that issue at some point, but who knows. But it was a fun one to read. And I'm really, so I've read a few past that on the in the Asylum Arkham trade, and so far they've all been pretty.
Do you watch Gotham?
I've seen like the first three seasons, but I haven't seen anything beyond that.
Riddler.
I know about him and stuff. And,
well, Riddler does some really good riddles in this final season.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think the last season I saw was when he really, like, lost it and killed that, was it, I don't know who it was, it was.
Oh, he killed that woman?
Was always, that he had liked.
Well,
yeah,
it's so weird, though, he killed the woman that he absolutely loved in his other persona, and then Penguin killed the woman that looked like her in the next season.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He had somebody kill her because they had a scene where Penguin fell in love with the Riddler. Like he started to love him, like on a personal level, and he got jealous of
the Penguin loved the Riddler?
Yes.
Okay.
And he became jealous of the girl.
Oh.
And he killed the second one. But the banter between the Penguin and the Riddler is, in my opinion, makes Gotham. Like those two actors are phenomenal. I mean, they're so good. Even though Penguin now in the final season, he, the way they deck him out and what he wears, he looks like Clarion the Witch Boy.
Really?
Yeah, he could
Does
be Clarion. No, the way they do his hair and stuff, like he just—it's just insane.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking in Comic Base, and I won't be getting this issue anytime soon. At least not near mint condition, that's for sure. Maybe I can reduce it down to like a very good. There you go, I could get a very good.
Pretty expensive, huh?
For a near mint, it's just over 1,000, according to this, and I think that, like Mike always says, it's a conservative database, so if you're actually looking
drop it down to a fine.
To fine?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad.
What is it?
340.
Well, that's interesting. I wanted to see how the database reacted, but when I bought my copy, mm-hmm. it locked in on the value that it was when I bought it.
Mm.
So I went for me, it fine says $60. So I was like, okay, that's affordable. Why can't he get it for $60?
Why isn't it changing?
It doesn't change for you? Well, I don't think it updates. Well, I mean, why isn't it changing
for you? Why is it saying
$60? Maybe if I right click on it and say update, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's weird. It locks in on what you bought it at, I guess.
You should put that in the cost instead of the price.
You'd want the price. Or maybe I have a checkbox selected on updates to not update the price. I didn't check that.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah.
Yeah. But what does fine say for you?
$340.
Oh, wow. That's expensive as hell.
Yeah, but, you know, we're that type of an issue. I mean, it's not like I'm running out and buying it today, that's for sure. But, you know, it's something that's attainable.
It's obtainable, yeah, definitely. And fine is a good condition, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Well,
fine
especially
is, fine is fine is like a this. Very good comic book.
Yeah, I agree.
There are even some VGs I get that, man, to me, they look borderline fine. Like, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how old the comic is.
Yeah. And,
well, not just that, but how pricey it normally is, too, because that definitely influences me on what I'm willing to accept in terms of flaws if I really want a certain issue. You know, like if I ever ended up getting an Avengers 4 at this point, you know, I'd be getting a very good copy. And I would be happy with it because I would, you know, actually own it.
Yeah, I would if I could get a copy that's in good and would mm-hmm. be halfway decent, I would accept it if it was Captain America's first.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on to the next book, Chris.
All right. Well, I read some more Nexus. I'm actually going to try to cover two issues. Because I think I can do so fairly quickly, because that will take us through the remainder of the black and white issues, the first three. And while it continues from the first issue, both issues are deal also with the origin of Nexus. They're called the Origin of Nexus Part 1 and Part 2. Again, these are written by Mike Barron with art by Steve Rude. And in the first issue, there was a guy who offered to get rid of the troublesome dreams that Nexus was having with the condition that in exchange he would kill this criminal, and it was somebody that a lot of the refugees and homeless aliens and stuff that are living on Nexus's planet were supportive of the idea of this guy being killed. So issue two starts off, we're actually with the guy who is the target that Nexus is supposed to kill, and his name is Zephyr. He and his people, they're alien looking. Their faces, they have these big black eyes, kind of almost, they have like reptilian noses, bald heads, and he's got the scheme of this kind of early chapter is he's got this advisor that keeps updating him on projections that he's Nexus's target, starting out with the 85% probability, so he sends out this armada basically of ships, and then this large thing that he calls the eschatological cannon. So then we switch over to Nexus's point of view, and he's quite relaxed about the whole situation. He's not really paying any attention to what's going on. He's reading the newspaper and chatting about Montreal's new goalie. Meanwhile, they're receiving these alerts that they've entered the space area of space that belongs to this Zephyr, and that he needs to pull over to the nearest customs house. And obviously, so they're ignoring. They turn on this huge cannon to attack Nexus's ship, but Nexus just ram the cannon with their ship. So picking up the pace a little bit, what ends up happening is that Nexus decides not to kill this guy after all, and refuses to honor the deal that he's made with the guy who said that he could get rid of his dreams. So that guy says, well, if you're not going to kill him, I'll kill him myself. But Nexus blasts his weapon out of his hand before he can do it either. And so that puts this guy in a pretty rough situation where he's surrounded by all of Zephyr's men, but he has a means of teleporting out of there, manages to escape. So Sutta is the name of the guy that tried to hire him. He's a normal human looking guy with just like a few strands of hair on a bald head. And he's convinced that Nexus's power comes from a fusion plasma generator. And it's revealed that he's got two colleagues, Hague and Yalta, on Yalom, which is Nexus's planet, that are going to look for this plasma generator. So the next chapter of the issue takes place on Nexus's planet, and it deals with these men of Sutta looking for this plasma generator, and some of the aliens that are living on Nexus's planet encounter them deal with the fact that they've got an infiltration. So they start looking for the intruders, led by Dave, which is the name of one of the chief aliens that we got to know last issue.
Dave? Dave the alien?
Dave the alien, I guess. It's kind of funny because some of the aliens on Nexus's planet have common Earth-sounding names, and then others have weird names. Because there's also Tyrone is one of the other aliens. And Dave he looks a little bit primey, but he's got hair. He's got a little bit of a beard and a swooping kind of pointy bit of hair up in the air, kind of. Whereas Tyrone, his actual head is pointy. He's got kind of like a fin. So anyway, we go through a sequence of Sutta's people being found and battled, and Dave's kind of a pacifist, which is in accordance with Nexus's wishes that they try to avoid casualties, but they are not very successful in that. They kill almost everybody that's intruding. Meanwhile, Susanna Peel, the woman who's a reporter that showed up at the planet last issue, she takes the opportunity of all the commotion to go try to sneak into Nexus's private quarters. She encounters one of Sutta's men in his private quarters there, and has to defend herself with this weapon that's available there. So in the aftermath of that, they have only one of the intruders left alive, and Nexus returns, asks what has been going on, they have a short funeral for one of the aliens that that died in the attack, and we get into the actual origin of Nexus when he sits down with the woman, Peel, and offers to tell her his story. So we get into the origin of Horatio Hellpop, which is Nexus's real name, which is great. His father is Theodore Hellpop, and basically... summarizing a lot, he was involved in putting down an uprising of rebels on this far distant planet, and because he was successful, he was made to be a viceroy after that. And he ends up meeting the woman that becomes Nexus's mother. She's a part of a local merchant family, and she comes in to see him about her brother that was arrested, who is a priest of this particular religion. And he's immediately taken with her. So time passes. They get together and they marry. But her brother, the priest, he marries them, and then later when she's pregnant, he gives, it's their tradition to bless the baby before it's born. Well, he in the blessing, he says the child is cursed.
Doesn't sound like much of a blessing.
Right. And so what's behind that is that he is he's always been secretly sympathetic with the rebellion that had been put down by Nexus's father earlier. So a war breaks out again, and eventually it gets to the point where the government is losing, Nexus's father is losing, so his orders are, you know, to put down this rebellion at any cost. And he gets to the point where he decides that there's no other recourse but to destroy the planet itself. Even though it might seem horrible to some, he leaves with his wife, his pregnant wife, and he destroys the planet and everyone on it, rather than let the rebellion win. And he sets course to the nearest black hole, to whatever oblivion it'll take him to. But what ends up happening is that he ends up on the planet that Nexus is now on. So they live there. Nexus is born. They raise him. He has these two friends, Alpha and Beta, and they're just kind of like alien-looking creatures that appear one day, and his parents can't see them, but he plays with them. And when he's 5 years old, his mom wanders off into one of the corridors on this giant planet, and never returns. and they don't find her until 3 months later, where she had gotten lost and starved to death.
Oh, jeez.
So Horatio Nexus, he's mad at Alpha and Beta, his friends, because he thinks that they could have been able to help his mom, and they were nowhere to be found. And they say, you know, they just didn't know. When Nexus is 9, he has his first attack, and we saw in the beginning of issue 1, he was kind of floating in this tank of liquid, and this is the first time where he's put in that. There's technology on the planet that's like automated medical care, so that's where that comes from. And so he continues to play with this Alpha and Beta. As he gets older, they show him his father's journal, and that's how he learns about his father's past of blowing up this planet of 3.5 million people. And that's not long after that is when he starts having these dreams about his father's life and about the his father's brother-in-law, the priest, and all these different things. And the first time he manifests any power is when he gets angry at Alpha and Beta. At this point, he looks like he's a teenager. And he gets so angry that he ends up firing power bolts from his hands for the first time and destroying Alpha and Beta, whether they're real or not ever. It's kind of up in the air. So he continues to have dreams about his father, and he's suffering from these dreams, and he has to go into the tank every once in a while. They don't help with the dreams, but otherwise he has these attacks and he's paralyzed basically. And one time he's in the tank, he sees a vision of Alpha and Beta, and they tell him that the only way he's going to, he's not going to go mad is if he gets rid of the source of the dreams. And all the dreams are about his father. So one day he walks into his father's study, and he says, "I love you, Dad." And then he fires the bolts and kills his father. After that, he doesn't see Alpha and Beta anymore, and he's alone at this point. But one of the times he's in the bubble, he dreams of the name Nexus. And when he gets out of the bubble that time, the Nexus costume is just there waiting for him. So that's kind of the end of the origin, and from there we just he spends some more time with the woman. He loses his virginity. Apparently he's still a virgin at this point, but he loses his virginity with the woman. And meanwhile, Tyrone is getting tired of Nexus and Dave's pacifist kind of rule, and with all respect, they want to take a more aggressive approach and use the weapons that are on the planet to free their people that are still in slavery. And the other thing that's going on is Dave thinks that there's a spy amongst the people that's reporting back to that Sutta guy, because how would he have known in the first place that Nexus was having these dreams that he tried to use to, you know, to convince him to kill that guy? So the rest of this second issue is dealing with that Sutta guy, and he shows up again, thinking still that Nexus has this fusion plasma generator. And so Nexus kind of goes along with it, even though he's totally wrong. He doesn't have this generator, and that's not where his powers are from. And him and Sutta battle it out. Sutta's it's pretty cool. Seta's got this ship, and he's got all of these slaves. There's just rows and rows and rows of their heads, which he's beheaded all these slaves and put them in these, their heads in these jars that keep their minds alive, and he siphons all this power from these decapitated heads, and that's how he's able to, like, you know, match power with Nexus, but only to a certain point, and his power starts wearing out, and Nexus basically obliterates him eventually, but in the process, a couple stars are destroyed. So this this second issue ends with some ambassadors and official type people on Earth calling an emergency meeting, basically discussing the fact that they can't let someone with the power of Nexus, who seems to be responsible for the destruction of several stars, they can't just let that be. That they're going to at least have to send a delegation to try to reason with him, and if not, take stronger action. So there's like a three page little story called Tales of Dave. That's just this kind of like silly little thing where Dave tells another alien about like something that happened to him when he was younger, where he's in the desert and he runs into this thing called a mirror monster, which is this blobby looking kind of creature that, as it sounds, you know, as it sounds, with the mirror master, copies everything you do, and he figures out though that it's vulnerable to sound, and so he makes this makeshift bugle and blows it in its face, and it knocks it out long enough that he's able to go on his way. But so that's the end of the black and white issues of Nexus, and the next one they published, I think, was a new number one, but it looks like it's in color for the first time, and it was but it pretty much picks up where it left off, because just looking at the first page, I didn't mention that Nexus, in keeping with his mission, he takes back all of the decapitated heads with him from Sutta's ship. So it looks like the next issue starts off with like them having a problem with all the decapitated heads floating around.
are you going to read those too? Are you reading those next?
I think I'll probably keep going with it, just because
that's cool.
It's different enough from like the typical superhero kind of stuff. But
I have a question for you with those that three issue or initial series. Do you have the record that comes with number three?
No, because I'm just reading a digital version of the omnibuses that.
It came with an MP3.
Dark Houses, No, it didn't. Dark Horse, I think, put these out. But
gotcha. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I was just looking through the thing. It said with a record. I'm like, oh my god, a record.
Oh, that's cool.
Sounds one of those, like, you know,
wacky thing that they would do.
Plastic, yeah.
Now I want it.
Yeah.
Comics plastic in floppy. Stereo.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see what his art looks like in black and white. Like, if it looks close to what it is now. Because Steve Rude, to me, in my opinion, has gotten better with age. Like, I think he draws amazing now. I can't imagine what it looks like then. Just like who did the Elmer Fudd issue?
Lee Weeks.
Yeah, his art to me has gotten better over time.
Yeah,
I would say like my basic description of that is the art in these issues is really good. In terms of storytelling and anatomy and everything like that. Everything yeah. seems really competent and like definitely professional. It doesn't quite have the pop or just that quality that kind of immediately identifies it to me as Steve Rude art.
Steve Rude, yeah.
So I think that he's got really like the fundamentals and everything down where you wouldn't be disappointed by this art. For those, you know, standard qualities that you look for, but
yeah.
he doesn't quite have like that. He hasn't quite totally refined his style.
Damn it, Barb. Daryl's going to be listening to it
is
again.
Is that Barb?
We're trying to do the Lord's work, and you're like
is that Barb
sneezing all
away?
Over all of these comic books you just sneezed on.
Oh, my God. Are
Damn.
They all wet and disgusting now?
Oh, Lord. Thank God they're in bags and boards. Except for my West Coast Avengers Volume 2.
I'll cover my mouth.
Woo! Soaking wet. I just
is she like it. Is she trying to gather samples for experiments or something like that? She's gonna put her snot in test tubes or something. And...
The irony of the situation is Daryl just texted about our last episode and she sneezed on it too, and she says, "Damn it, Barb! They're trying to do the Lord's work. Why are you sneezing?" And she did it again.
So did it again.
No, they don't gotta go. You want more comic books. You're the proud owner of all these Batman comics, Barb. You almost have every single Batman since like the 60s. No, you can't get rid of them. You get rid of me too.
If they go, you go, huh?
They're part of me. They're like an extension of my body.
I can picture you like on the back of like this huge pile of long boxes, like sitting on top, cross-legged as like the truck carrying them rides off into the sunset.
Rides off into the sunset. Me in tears and crying.
It's just like the silhouette of like a large rectangle with. with a man's shape on top of it.
That's right. I've never read Nexus, so I would be interested to see if I have read a Nexus, but I think it was a crossover with something like Nexus mm-hmm. and Aliens or Superman or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He crossed over with somebody, DC or Dark Horse.
Yeah, there was
Dark Horse likes to do a lot of the. They just published like another volume of Justice League crossovers with Dark Horse properties.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Magnus Robot Fighter, I've got those.
Oh yeah, that's what I had.
And Steve Rude did the art in that too.
That's a cool idea for a crossover.
Mm-hmm.
So, what else did you read, Mike?
I'll just go over one more. Well, I'm gonna talk about two. I'm gonna talk about two real quick. The first one, I don't have a lot to say about it, like in terms of plot, but it was pretty awesome. Is one of my friends, Reed. He's looking to sell his collection of stuff, so he's
appearing in comics again.
Yeah, now that Reed Richards is back. He was a listener of Geek Brunch like way back, and I met him in North Carolina, and he's been listening to the show like forever. And I think you tweeted about this too, Chris, like you kind of want to get rid of paper and, you know, make room for other things, I guess. Well, I think he's in the same boat. Like he wants to get rid of his collections, and he sold me like a bunch of Ghost Riders that I need. And like right now I'm like really close to completing my Ghost Rider, which means I have every single volume since the motorcycle days. I don't have the guy on the white horse or the ghost cowboy one, but he sold me a really nice collection. I didn't even have any desire to get into Gold Key. That's one area, unless there's like a Laugh Olympics or something like that that I want to get for retro reasons, because I like that property so much. But he sold me, I asked him if he had any old 70s Bronze Age stuff, and one of the things he said he had was Mars Patrol Total War. And Dark Horse did collect this, by the way, in a hardcover archive when they started to do a lot of the Gold Key properties like Magnus and stuff. And this Mars Patrol started with issue 3, and the first two issues were called Total War, and then it switched to Mars Patrol Total War. And man, does it read like a G.I. Joe concept. Like, if Larry Hama read this, I could see how it could have influenced his creation of G.I. Joe, because there's this team of military guys, and they're like Mars Patrol, and they have specialists, you know, like how each G.I. Joe character has like a specialist on comm or sharpshooting or whatever. That's what these guys specialize in. These covers, I don't know if you have access to the database right now, Rob, but if you check Mars Patrol, they're freaking amazing covers, man.
Do I have to put dots between all the letters?
No, you just type it in, Mars Patrol. Just look at, mouse over some of those covers, man. They're amazing. Okay. This is issue 4, and it stands for Marine Attack Rescue Service, and we're at war with these weird, like, clone-like baldy guys. Like, they actually have, they're called baldies. And they have, like, advanced stuff, kind of like Cobra. And this issue dealt with that, is, like, they were just on a mission. They had to go to the Arctic because they had a military base there. And they've been talking to them, and they said, they're acting weird. Let's go. It's kind of like, if you ever see Starship Troopers, I think it's the sequel or the one after that. Like, I've watched all the Starship Troopers. But it's one of the aliens took over the body in Starship Troopers, and they're like, okay, come over here, and they're really aliens, and they end up going to the fort, and they have to deal with the aliens. Well, that's what this kind of thing is. They go over there, and then everybody there are these baldy guys, and they're overrun. And they end up getting into a firefight. And that kind of ends. And it has a good interlude. It has an intermission. This comic has an intermission. And they have, like, lighthearted cartoons. It has, like, riddles. Like, a whole page written in riddles that I found pretty good. I was like, I ranked them. Like, there was maybe 3 riddles that the Riddler could have used. And then the rest of them were just ridiculous. But... And then it has, like, short, funny cartoons. And it was, like, a good intermission. It like, ended, like, in a good cliffhanger. And then you had an intermission of comedy. And then you came back and you finished the story. But I bought most of this series. And I just added the remainder, which I'm only lacking, like, 2 of this series. Plus Total War number 1 and 2. I add it to my next DCBS order so I can complete it, but it's a pretty fascinating series.
I actually have number 7. That's the only one I have, and it's the only one that seems to not have that nice painted cover work.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about, because I have it. It stands out like a sore thumb.
It does, doesn't it? It's just, I mean, it's like just you got a regular comic book cover.
It's like you got these beautiful covers, and then you got that... one issue that stands out, and it's like, it just stands out as odd, because
yeah.
Gold Key was known for drawing, like, some of the Magnus Robot Fighter, speaking of, those are, like, beautiful covers, man. Mm-hmm. Holy moly. And Magnus does, and Solar has the same thing. They'll have some beautiful painted covers, and then you get, like, this one oddball that looks like it was not painted, and it just stands out. You know, you're like, yeah. What happened? But they do that a lot. But Mars Patrol is funny. But the book that I'm going to cover, this was pretty hilarious. Is I was going back to buy some Batman issues, and this is Batman 277. And it has an interesting cover, and it has an interesting creative team. David V. Reed, and art is by Ernie Chua.
I liked his writing on this during this era. I never knew him before.
It was interesting. I have read him before, but I never it his when I have read it, there are older issues in my collection, and I never like who is that who is that. Now that I'm reading, I'll look out for him, because I was missing like 15 issues, like from 277 to whatever that number turns out to be.
This is where I started when I started at 263 up and going through it, as I'm reading all of these. So it wasn't too long ago that I read these, but yeah, I really enjoy these.
Well, this might sound familiar to you then.
Yeah, that's fine.
This story was cool because it's like a Bruce story initially. Bruce is out like Florida. This is like the Scooby-Doo template, Scooby-Doo Monster of the Week template, if I've ever seen it. It's Bruce is in Florida, and he's reading a newspaper, and they're talking about like a swamp monster, and he's like, he's with this girl on the beach, and what is her name? I want to see if I could see her name, but I don't see it, because they didn't never say her last name, but she's like in a bikini, and he's there, and he's like, hey, will you go with me to see if this swamp monster is true? And she goes, I'm scared. No, I don't want to go. And he's like, convinces her to go. And they do run into the swamp monster. And he like scares the girl. She goes off and running. He's like, go run towards the mansion or whatever, the beach house. I'll fend off. Bruce finds this twig on the beach and just lights it on fire and goes after the swamp monster with this fire thing, and he ends up going back in the water, and he's like, what is this? This, my vacation's ruined. I gotta find out what this sea monster's doing. He traces him back as Batman to a cave, and then he gets knocked out. He fights this one guy with a sword. He looks like a pirate, and he's not even part of the story. Somebody knocks him out and then kills the other dude and then frames Bruce Wayne as the murderer, that he murdered this other guy. So Bruce gets arrested. He gets imprisoned. He escapes the prison while the cops are gone, and then manages to solve the crime. But he gets knocked out by these guys. What it turns out to do is these guys are using the monster to smuggle drugs into this area, and they want to scare away the public, so when they boat in these drugs, nobody will witness them because they don't want to go near the beach, because that's why they have the monster. And they're using this cave to like fence these drugs. Batman catches them and ends up fighting them, but he beats up like three of them, and then one guy hits him in the back of the head with the crowbar. They don't bother to unmask him or anything. They just I can't believe they did this. They get this huge pipe that will fit a human body in, and they're in the ocean on a boat. And they use this crane to drop the pipe vertically in, directly into the ocean. And then
oh, I remember this, yes.
They throw Batman into the pipe just so he could drown. But luckily, they didn't take off his utility belt and stuff, and the water, what ends up happening is the water rises in the pipe, so he eventually floats to the top. But that was a stupid ass trap. And then he goes and he fights this, he was dressing up in his swamp monster costume and knocks him out. And then he takes out the two other guys. And then we have this great public service announcement. It's one of the best public service announcements I've ever read in a comic book. It has Superman, and it has a bunch of teenage kids, and one of the kids says, sure is hot. And the girl says, sure is, and there's nothing to do. I heard there's a party going on at Carol's place, and the boy says, let's crash it. And then they run into Superman. They're like, Superman! And Superman says, where are you going? And the kids say, to a party, but we weren't invited. And Superman says, be careful. And they say, be careful. Yes, if you're not invited and they don't want you to come, don't crash the party. If you do, you are trespassing, and that's against the law. He's like telling kids not to crash the party. So the girl says, so if we are invited in, it's okay, but if not, we should leave right away. And Superman says, right. Ridiculous public service announcement. I guess, what year was this?
Late 70s, wasn't it?
1976. I guess kids were crashing parties and causing violence back in that time period.
I guess that was the big issue back then.
Yeah, it was a hot item.
Yeah, house crashers.
And then Bruce wakes up in prison, and the cops say, well, we found out who really killed that guy. They were left by Batman, and you're lucky that Batman found them. And then there's just a closing scene with him and Commissioner Gordon with Batman. And he's like, how are you and Bruce there at the same time in Florida? You know, but it was a really fun one-shot issue. It was great. Plus, it was worth the price of admission to read that public service announcement.
Service announcement.
I know it's got me changing my plans for later on today.
I know, right?
Don't go crash a party.
I was going to, but now I see the error of my ways.
I had to have Barb read that because I just thought it was hilarious.
She's always crashing parties.
Yeah. I'm glad you do, because she's always showing up at other people's houses and sneezing.
Sneezing, right? That's right.
Sneezing into
I'm
parties.
I'm waiting for the sneezing Superman public service announcement. What I would do one if they did it today, I'd be like podcasting, and then she'd be going at chew, and then Superman would show up and say, don't you know it's rude to be to interrupt the Lord's work?
Or you can she'll start to sneeze, like she'll tilt her head back to like she's going to sneeze, and all of a sudden there'll be a finger appear under her nostrils,
and it'll be Superman's finger.
It'll be Superman's finger.
Exactly.
That's right. So don't you know it's rude to sneeze during a podcast? Chris said that Superman would come by and just stop you from sneezing by going like that.
I love that.
Don't sneeze on the comics. That's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have one more.
All right.
I've got the Teen Titans number 44 from 1976.
Oh, I've read this.
Oh, you have?
I don't know which one it is yet, but I know I've read it because I read all those.
It's by Paul Levitz and Bob Rozakis, and the artists are Pablo Marcos and Bob Smith. So this issue is the first one after a 3-year hiatus.
Oh, yeah.
So I got a handful of these. I don't even remember where, but I got about 6 of them maybe between this and the last issue, which was 53, at some point, and just picked them all up. And so, you know, it literally just picks up like just as if they have been inactive for some time. They're going back to their headquarters because there is an alarm actually going off. So they're trying to figure it out. And so Robin and Malcolm come by helicopter, and Wonder Girl comes, and Kid Flash arrives as well. And it turns out that they're trying to figure out who exactly rose the alarm, because all of them are saying, well, we didn't raise the alarm. And Mal has been coming there weekly just to check up on the equipment, make sure everything's still running correctly. But he hasn't heard from any of the other heroes at all. Nobody's has made contact with him. He feels kind of bitter because he knows that Robin's been doing his own thing and Kid Flash has been doing his own thing, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody bothered, you know,
contacting him or checking up to see how he was doing. And he says, you know, what happened to Lilith? What happened to Narc? Hawk and Dove? He's like, so on and so forth. So Speedy arrives, and they're already there, and they're asking how he's feeling and stuff, because this is shortly after the events that happened in the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series. So he's on his way to recovery, and he's joining the team. And what it turns out is that nobody rose the alarm, but it was Dr. Light who did it as a trap. And so he starts attacking the members of the Teen Titans one by one. And after some back and forth, he manages to grab Wonder Girl in a ring of light, and starts taking off with her. And Robin runs out to help. Meanwhile, Mel and Speedy are out of action, but not before Speedy had shot an arrow that had a big round ball on the end of it, and he had missed Dr. Light and had hit Kid Flash and the like. So he's got a sprained knee, and so he starts trying to run after Dr. Light, and also running behind Robin, and he runs out of their cave headquarters, and now he sees that Dr. Light has Robin and Wonder Girl with him, and because of his leg, he can't keep catch up. So the other three start arguing with each other because they weren't acting as a team, and that's how they managed to get defeated by Dr. Light. So at this point, we cut to wherever Dr. Light's headquarters is, and he's got Robin and Wonder Girl trapped, kind of handcuffed to a light beam. And he is saying that he wants information on the Justice League's satellite headquarters, that he wants to know how to get in. He wants all the information. He wants to be able to destroy the headquarters, and wants to know exactly where it is up in space. So he demonstrates he's got an orbiting magnifying glass and channeling unfiltered energy of the sun. He shows how he can destroy a passing asteroid, and that's what he wants to do to the headquarters as well. So he starts kind of torching Robin, and they both say they're not going to do anything, and they're not going to say anything. And he said, you know, I thought you would feel that way. So Robin, I'm going to start torturing Wonder Girl. And how long are you going to be able to sit there and watch that? So he agrees to give Dr. Light some information. So he gets what he needs. And in the meantime, Wally West has recovered enough that he wants to, that he's running back to Central City. And he wants to warn the Flash and get the JLA together to try to defeat Dr. Light. But just as he's getting to Barry's house, Dr. Light manages to sneak up behind him, and he zaps him with a light ray, knocks him out. So that's not successful, but Speedy had come as well. And, oh no, I'm sorry, I'm reading that wrong. So he had captured Wally, and then he ended up coming back to where Speedy and Malcolm were, because he figures he's going to grab them all. And they've both recovered enough that they start fighting Dr. Light, but Speedy gets blasted right away. And then Mal tries to jump up and hold on to Dr. Light before he turns into energy, and he's not able to do it. So now at this point, everyone's captured except for Malcolm, and he's tired, and he starts complaining that he's tired of being a second stringer and always being kind of sitting on the bench, so on and so forth. So he's looking around at all the lockers for all the different heroes that are part of the Teen Titans, and he comes up with an idea. And what that is he grabs an exoskeleton that one point Robin had used back in Batman number 192. And it gives him some extra punching power. So he puts that on. And for whatever reason, they have the Guardian. You remember the Guardian? He's got that blue outfit with the gold shield and the gold helmet. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they have his costume at the headquarters. I don't know why, but he puts all of that on, and he decides that he's going to try to do what he can to stop Dr. Light. So because he doesn't have access to the League's teleportation system, he actually has to pilot a mini rocket up to the headquarters. You cut to the satellite, and Flash is there just monitoring, and Dr. Light pops in because of the information that he had received from the Titans, and he starts shooting at Robin at Flash and misses, but he hit the gyro control, and the satellite starts like lurching around, and as Flash is running it, threw him off balance and knocks him out against the side of the console. So Dr. Light summons the rest of the Titans in a light bubble, and then he hears somebody else coming in through the airlock, and it's Malcolm dressed fully as the Guardian with that exosuit. So what they end up doing is they start exchanging blows, but while he's got him occupied, the rest of the Titans end up being able to escape because his concentration was not on the light bubble that he was holding all of the Titans in. And this time they all work together as a team and attack them all at the same time. And Dr. Light even says, I was, you know, ready to defeat you one by one, but not together. And in turn, they keep attacking them one after the other, and they end up defeating Dr. Light. And when Flash wakes up, he starts giving them a lecture about teamwork, and they say, spare us, Flash. We know what we did wrong, and keep your eye on the Teen Titans because nothing's going to hold us back now. So this was and then it has on the back, it has a little letters column where it just explains, okay, they've been gone since actually back in late 1972, and the fact that, okay, you know, Robin's still been around, and Kid Flash and Aqualad has still been around, but everyone else, you pretty much haven't seen much. And, you know, who are you going to, which characters will you see in the rest of the run now that Teen Titans are back? So this was fun. I mean, it was nice to read an issue of this, because this is one era that I've never really read anything with. The original era with Malcolm and with Narc and Lilith, I really haven't read much of that at all. So it was pretty interesting.
That's cool that they... I like to read the issues where they took a hiatus and came back.
Yeah, and like, it was cool.
I've been reading that in Challengers recently, so it's pretty neat to see.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, I actually covered that back when I was doing From Kid to Flash, and that's in the process of doing that show is when I read all of the original Teen Titans. And it's actually kind of interesting that they don't actually explain in Teen Titans why the Guardian's costume is there.
Yeah.
And it's actually in a story that runs through three issues of Superman Family. That picks up that bit from here.
Oh, okay.
Oddly enough. Which I covered on Mythmaking, etc. But yeah, I had actually had 191 and 192, and I actually found issue 193 to complete that story when I was at Baltimore Comic Con a few years ago. But yeah, that's actually where that gets picked up, and Mal as like the current Guardian meets the Kirby. Jim Harper, Guardian.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It ties into the fourth world with Double X and the DNA Project. And I think there's even like a couple characters from a story, if I'm remembering correctly, from Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane. It's really bizarre, like how that story connects to some different things.
That's interesting. Yeah, I figured that you probably have read this before because, you know, I knew that you were going through all of those stories. But, yeah, it was, you know, this whole – I mean, honestly, the whole first run of the Titans I'm not familiar with at all. Like, I pick up from the first volume of the New Teen Titans. That's really what I knew of them. Obviously, I knew that they existed and who the original members were. I don't know, just, you know, I guess it was just, I mean, it just seemed obvious to me for whatever reason, but I never read any of those stories. So this was interesting. And then especially like those later issues when you had those characters that really weren't well known at all, like Malcolm and Narc and stuff like that. I don't think I even knew who Narc was until that Titans Hunt mini that was just prior to Rebirth. I don't think I even had heard of him.
Malcolm is Mal, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he didn't. Yeah, he heard of him before. He just doesn't have his pipe anymore.
Right.
Yeah,
that was another thing. He could. He had a lot of different identities.
He was even in the Young Justice cartoon. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, he became Guardian. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool.
Remember it's just fun if Morrison used him or not. I remember in Seven Soldiers of Victory, there was a Guardian, but I don't remember if it was Malcolm.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a different guy.
I really am starting to think about that DC Universe thing, but it's hard because I just don't want to spend the money.
And just wait. I mean, it's not going anywhere. You don't have to decide right now.
That new show though just sounds appealing to me. So that's the only thing I'd really would miss out on is the new show, because everything else I could watch any of that stuff whenever. But it's not like I'm going to watch old news 6 months from now, even if it's available. And I don't know what the plan is for that.
If you're not going to use it, it's not worth it. If you think you're going to use it, then it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, when is it supposed to start? Soon, right?
Fall. So I would imagine October, September.
Oh, okay.
October.
I thought it was before that. But I mean, when, you know, you're getting it, right, Mike?
I'm getting it. I already signed up for 1 year.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I was realizing, man, we pay for Netflix. I haven't watched it in a while, so I just started watching a bunch of documentaries yesterday. And started Lost in Space, and I just gotta be disciplined enough to know, hey, I'm paying for this. Am I gonna use it? Just like I am with Marvel Unlimited, I always make sure I read at least 5 to 6 because then I feel like I'm getting my money's worth, you know.
Yeah.
If I do the same thing with DC Unlimited, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
If I feel I'm getting the $7 worth by watching two shows or reading two comics, then I think it's worth it.
And if you're getting a year, you're paying more like $5 too, which is fantastic.
I think it turns out to be $7.
Well, you're getting the 3 extra months for free.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
But, you know, Chris, I mean, you are right though. I mean, I kind of want to see and hear from, I mean, so many of my friends are getting it, whether it's you, Mike, or, you know, like, obviously, like, Ronnie and Martin and stuff. So, I mean, I guess I'll hear a lot more about it once it gets launched and I can make a better decision. But I'm assuming once it's launched, they're not going to keep offering that 3 months for free. I'm sure that's to get people signed up, you know, quickly.
Yeah, yeah, if you want to go to $9.99 probably or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's to entice people to subscribe for a longer period of time, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get.
But he could just say, you could literally wait till it's $9.99 and buy one month's worth and then watch 5 shows if you want and then cancel it.
True.
Watch the entire tight. I mean, that's cheaper than committing to 1 year, right? I mean.
Yeah.
So, like, if you can marathon like that, I couldn't. I know mine will have to be like a trickle stream.
Yeah. It all depends on the time of year. Like when it's the summer, we're in a good shape where I can just we can binge watch one show after the other. But during the regular part of the year with regular shows, we watch enough that it's like I don't want to leave everything on the DVR, so we wouldn't like spend time on a streaming service necessarily when I could be watching regular television that you know I'm going to fall behind on. So yeah, I mean. Yeah, I'm not gonna. I mean, I'm definitely not gonna get it right now, but it's something that I'm more and more leaning towards than I was when I. Like I was definitely gonna try it out eventually when there's a lot more shows available, but now I'm thinking it's gonna be sooner than later, depending on what all of you guys decide, or like what you think of it, I should say, once it launches.
Chris, you got another book?
Yeah, I'll close this out by going through kind of quickly Vigilante 43.
I like that series.
Yeah, it's a really good series. I think people overlook it sometimes because Vigilante is kind of a generic name, and I like his costume, but it's kind of funny. But it's really dark.
I thought near and, that time frame it was the girl.
No.
That doesn't come till later.
Not till later on. In this series, you had the original Vigilante that spun out of New Teen Titans. And then
that's
you
not
had a couple...
the original. The original guy is the guy that rides a motorcycle with the red bandana on his face.
Right. and within the series, you had like two other guys that like briefly take on the same identity when he takes a break. But at this point, it's Paul Kupperberg is writing it at this point, and he takes it out to the end of the series and with the guy, the original Vigilante. Not the original, but and this issue kind of it continues on a plot line that's been going on for a little while at this point, but I don't think it's too confusing. It basically comes down to there's Valentina Vostok who this because it's Paul Kupperberg, this will end up when Vigilante is over, he'll bring her and some other characters over into Checkmate. In that volume that kind of ran concurrently with Suicide Squad, which was starting up around this time. So you have her running this kind of secret government organization. And they had hired Peacemaker to take out a terrorist, but Peacemaker is really mentally ill. And so he went AWOL, and he's now after Vostok. Harry Stein, who's an ex-cop that Vostok picked up as a employee and Vigilante. And it's the issue starts off with the New York police are trying to corner Vigilante in the subway. And they're searching for him, all this damage from the fight in the previous issue. And he's hiding on top of the subway car, knows it's just a matter of time before they look up there. So he drops some smoke bombs as a diversion and starts taking off, throws some more smoke canisters to continue his escape. And he gets out of Union Station. Being Union Station, there's a ton of taxi cabs waiting outside. So he steals one of those. Is off on his way. Actually, I think I said New York police department, but he's in Washington, D.C. New York is his normal base of operations, but he's wanting to reach Vostok and Stein to help them, but he doesn't really know his way around the city. And we switch over to where Vostok and Stein are, and they have kind of a back and forth with a general that is putting the pressure on them and the things that have happened with the peacemaker. And that goes on for a couple pages. Meanwhile, there's a search on for the peacemaker, and they're searching all over the city for him, but he's actually not far from the building where they're at and hasn't been this whole time. He's been nearby, and the technology in his helmet is allowing him to listen in on what's going on in the office where Vostok and Stein and the general are at. Like I said, Peacemaker, this version of Peacemaker is pretty mentally ill, and he believes the voices in his helmet are terrorists that he's killed in the past, and that they're telling him and guiding him to kill more terrorists.
He believes a lot of terrorists, though.
He does.
I mean, if you go back to the Charlton days, I just recently started reading it. He kills. They usually have three stories in Peacemaker, and he usually kills three terrorists that are trying to nuke the world.
Yeah, and he's pretty effective here too, but he has a hard time discerning who is and who isn't a terrorist, and he's convinced that Harry Stein is this terrorist named Ahmed. So Vigilante has some more issues around town getting there. He ultimately takes a clipboard that the cabbie's got in his cab and jams it under the jams it against the gas pedal and leaps out of the taxi before it collides with the barricade that the police have set up with police cars. And he fires some random shots into the air to create some chaos. Runs through a couple buildings, eventually loses his tail. And while that's going on, the peacemaker makes his appearance once the general and other people that have showed up leave the office, and it's just Valentine and Harry Stein. So Harry Stein starts this act where he wants to keep Peacemaker busy as much as possible, tries convincing him, you know, that he's not the Sakhmed, but also acting more afraid than he really is, and pleading with him to, you know, trying to convince him that he's not that person by talking about his background as a cop and that kind of thing. And Peacemaker isn't buying any of it, but he's enjoying the act, thinking that Harry Stein is fearing for his life. He's sort of enjoying that aspect. This turns out to be a good plan because it gives the vigilante time to show up. But even right before he does, Harry drops to his knees and he's begging for his life. And then he pulls his feint and headbutts Peacemaker in the crotch. So that when Vigilante actually shows up, Harry Stein is on top of Peacemaker and ruining his knuckles on the Peacemaker's helmet. So it looks like the Peacemaker's going to get the upper hand again because he's got the technology in his helmet that he puts out like an ultrasonic signal that causes the three others clutch their skulls, but Vigilante is able to overcome it and is able to knock out Peacemaker. And that's kind of the resolution of this Peacemaker storyline that's been going on for a while. Valentina, Harry, and the vigilante, and just kind of start talking and catching up. And Vostok promises Vigilante that she'll deal with the little police problem that he's been having. And the last, 6 or 7 pages are sort of, it seems like it sort of acts as a prologue to the next issue, because it's going to be called Addictions and deal with addictions. And we get 2 sort of vignettes. One is of some rich teenagers or young 20-aged white kids going into score crack cocaine. And while this is happening, there are some actual real terrorists that are watching from a window above and talking about how basically they're making money to fund their terrorist activities while also putting crack out there and getting suburban kids addicted to crack is just kind of adds to their whole efforts. And there's this teenage couple, Bobby and Debbie, and Bobby's real into the crack and trying to convince Debbie to do it. And then the other last 3 pages are about a different guy, an alcoholic that wakes up from 3-day bender, doesn't know what day it is, goes into the bar, and he gets a shot to deal with his hangover, and typical kind of thing where he protests the fact that he's drunk, but then he sees a thing for an alcohol hotline, and he decides, actually, maybe what's it gonna hurt, maybe I'll call. We see his side of the conversation, and the woman tells him, seems to tell him that they have counseling available and stuff, and he's just looking for a place to dry out. And he finds out that all the beds are taken up by crack addicts. And so he just hangs up, and it's like, all they want to give me is talk, and I need help. Or maybe a drink. And so it seems like those 2 things are gonna be fleshed out in the next issue. But yeah, this Vigilante series is a good one. It's a lot darker.
The cover and art are pretty awesome too.
Yeah, it's got a cool cover.
The cover art is awesome in this series.
Yeah, this one is by Todd Smith, and it's got it's a black cover, and the black of Vigilante's costume blends in with the black of the cover, and so you just kind of see that V on the top and his eyes and the goggles, and he's holding the revolver up in front of his face. But then there's a smaller bit where you see him driving the taxi car with the police cars chasing after him. So it's a nice composed cover. But yeah, it has a suggested for mature readers thing on the front of these issues, and this issue is not as it might not sound, but that there's been previous issues that were even kind of darker in the material that it's covering and stuff. So it's there for a reason. But yeah, it's a good series. And that's all I've got.
Do you got another one, Rob?
No, I don't.
All right.
Do we have any questions?
No.
Oh, damn it.
No questions. Nick had to go take care of a garage door. We might have had one.
Yeah, he's the garage door repairman.
Yeah.
That's who I call.
call Nick and say, can you fix the garage door? I call Bill Bulmer for my elevator and garage door service.
Yeah, elevator. Yeah, that my elevator. That's always Bill, but...
All right, well, you've been listening to Geek Brunch Podcast and Retro, specifically. And you can reach us... God damn, I can't remember your monkey Twitter handle again. Just make an ETC! It's monkey something, right?
Robot Wolf Face.
Robot Wolf Face. I was close. I wasn't.
I'm just
It's funny that you said that the other day on Twitter, because I was trying to tag Chris on something.
So was
I. Like, I can't friggin' find him. I'm like, I know it's Wolf something, so I started looking for that, and then it came up. I'm like, I can't find you guys out
because, you know, they have those memory aid games that you can download on your phones and stuff like that. I know you guys are getting old, and I want to challenge your memories so that your brains, you know, you don't get Alzheimer's and stuff.
I don't know why you would change it. It makes it so hard. I'm at Mike Myers Brunch and at Rob Krieger.
Yeah, mine is nice and easy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Why?
It wasn't easy for him to pronounce, but he's overcome that. He's overcome that
challenge. I have. I got it down now.
Now you need a new challenge. Good job.
I just spell it wrong now. That's what I do to say it right. I spell it like Seeger.
Yeah.
And I
Chris is the one that came out with the Seeger. And I always say it now, like. Seeger.
I know that was good. You guys did that one time when I wasn't here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to come up with some kind of memory tool for you to remember my new Twitter.
It's monkey something face, and it's monkey's not even in it.
Maybe I'll change it to monkey something face.
Yeah, change it to monkey something. I'll remember that monkey something face.
I don't know why.
I like Planet of the Apes. All right. Well, you guys have a good Sunday. Yeah, I'm going to go buy some comics. I wish you guys were going with me.
Oh, but... Mike, make sure you let us know what you get.
Oh, yeah. You'll know on the Twitter.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Have a good time. Enjoy it.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.